Today's show is sponsored by Bob's Red Mill, employee-owned and operated, and founded on the principle of good food for all. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to Feast Meets West, the show where we tell the story behind your favorite Asian dishes. I'm Linda Liu, and on the line is my co-host in Hong Kong, Iris Van Kerkhove.
Good morning from Hong Kong.
We are broadcasting live from Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Every episode, Iris and I dig deep on a dish or an aspect of Asian cuisine, and we interview experts on the topic.
I'm personally very excited for this episode because we're going to be talking about an Asian dish that gets almost no love in the West, and that is stinky tofu.
Wonder why.
We have an audio clip from Jawit Yu, chef of Holy Fook in Hong Kong, who's going to talk about why you see less and less stinky tofu in Asia. And we have Carson Yu, founder of Outer Borough, in the studio with us today to give us an American perspective and tell us why his mom's stinky tofu is the best. But before we get into all of that, Linda and I like to kick off the show with a question for each other. What's the best thing you ate in the past week?
Yeah, so I went to D.C. over the weekend, and I finally got to try Teep Cow. And for our listeners, you'll know that we interviewed Chef Sang last season about sticky rice. So it was super cool to go to her Lao restaurant and try everything. My favorite dish was this crispy coconut rice with sour pork, peanut, lime, ginger, scallion, mint, cilantro, just like a ton of different flavors and textures that they serve up with lettuce for wraps. It makes my mouth water just talking about it.
Ooh, that sounds awesome. I can't wait to go there one day.
Yeah, you must. So what about you, Iris? What did you eat?
So there's this place that opened up, and I've been waiting a while to form an opinion of it. But basically, if you've ever watched No Reservations, there was an episode where Anthony Bourdain goes to see the lunch lady in Vietnam. And so this guy, this Hong Kong kid, like, went and sort of, like, apprenticed with her in Vietnam. And he came back. He opened this restaurant that's near my job. And the banh mi is so good. Like, it's full of, like, thick-cut Vietnamese cold cuts, you know? Mm. It's just, like, a super satisfying banh mi. And it's, like, it's just all I want to eat every day now.
That's amazing. So, I feel like you've talked about banh mi a lot, like last season.
Like, I know. It's weird. It's like I hadn't eaten it in years, and then now it's like all I want to eat. It's kind of like how I listen to music, too. It's like I'll listen to an album, and I'll just play it on repeat for like 3 months straight, and then I'll move on to the next thing.
Oh, find the nuances and everything that's great about it. Yeah, so today, I mean, we're going to be talking about stinky tofu, and we do tend to talk a lot about Asian dishes here that have made it in the U.S., and we've covered so many beloved foods like banh mi, you know, pho, Korean BBQ, dumplings, and so forth. Now we want to talk about some iconic foods from Asia that we aren't sure will ever enjoy the same mainstream of success, maybe because they're just too different for the Western palate. And of course, one of the first things that came to mind was stinky tofu.
So stinky tofu is a type of fermented tofu originating in China that is popular as a street snack in Taiwan and Hong Kong. as with a lot of the more ancient foods we talk about here, there isn't really one agreed-upon origin story, but supposedly a man named Wang Zhehe accidentally discovered sticky tofu in the Qing Dynasty after he stored unsold tofu in an earthen jar and after several days found it to be stinky and green but delicious. But yes, there's a good reason why it's called stinky tofu. It has a super strong odor that has been described as smelling like garbage, farts, rotting cheese, or just straight up poop. What's interesting about stinky tofu fermentation is that there's no fixed formula or recipe. It really depends on regional and individual variations. But if it's made traditionally, it will involve some sort of brine that may also include vegetables and meat, and fermentation can take several months. These days, of course, a lot of stinky tofu isn't made this way anymore, and factories have shortcuts to industrially produce it, which vendors just buy and fry to order. Do you eat stinky tofu, Linda?
To be honest, can't say I have had much of it. So the second time I had stinky tofu was most recently, where I tried Carson's mom's stinky tofu served up at Winsun. Another Feast Meets West guest from the past. And it was interesting and delicious. And when it came out, I feel like everyone in the restaurant could smell it. But I would try it again. What about you, Iris?
I hadn't had it in years, so I was inspired by this episode to go get some last night. So I just went to like a little vendor in Wan Chai in Hong Kong. And first of all, I was like, it's not stinky enough because you should be able to smell like, I think we're really selling this food, that like farty smell like from a mile away. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really smell it. And I tried it and it doesn't taste weird at all, actually. Like it doesn't really match the smell. It's pretty good. I'm not a huge fan of like fried foods, but it's nice once in a while. But the funny thing was after we left the stall, my friend was like, I feel like I smell it on us, and we were both like, oh, we need a shower. So I had a quick chat with Chef Jiawit Yu. He's originally from Taiwan, and his family immigrated to Canada when he was a kid. He later moved to Australia, where he spent a decade and really made his mark on the Sydney food scene. He's now the chef at Holy Fook, a contemporary Chinese restaurant here in Hong Kong. While it's obvious why stinky tofu is not popular in the West, he provides some great insight on why it's also been falling out of fashion in the East in this clip.
My name is Jiawit Yu. I'm the chef of Holy Fook Restaurant in Hong Kong. My cultural background, I was born in Taiwan. I grew up in Canada, and then I immigrated to Australia, but now I live in Hong Kong. My first memories of stinky tofu was probably around 6 years old. We grew up in a small town called Tam Sui. It's about 45 minutes north of Taipei. There was a street side vendor that was selling stinky tofu. And I remember asking my dad, like, what's that smell? Because I was just walking along the river. I smelled it from a mile away. And he said, oh, it's stinky tofu. Do you want to try? He's like, yeah, sure, okay. I remember having some deep-fried stinky tofu for the first time, and I thought it was delicious. Yeah. There's a few ways of eating stinky tofu. Some people prefer to deep-fry it. Some people prefer to leave it whole and let it braise with duck blood, like in a hot pot style with lots of chilies. I prefer just deep-fried, served with Taiwanese-style pickled cabbage, pao cai. And I just think the chili sauce gives heat and seasoning to the tofu. And the Taiwanese pao cai is really good at giving acidity and cutting through the richness of the deep-fried tofu. I think stinky tofu, for most part, is the smell that is off-putting for people. But when you describe it as, well, you know, there's a lot of stinky foods that the Western cultures eat, for example, like blue cheese, you know, which is super funky for Asians, and if you put it in that sort of perspective like that, they may be more prone to trying it and can be more easily convinced. You know, something stinky can be also delicious at the same time. I think the future of stinky tofu in Asia, I think, if just based on my observations, there's a lot less and less stinky tofu shops than I can remember when I was in Taiwan. You know, there's still a small but stronghold with the people that really believe in stinky tofu. I think it just needs of a branding and reimagined. And also the image that has, in recent years, have been not very good, which sort of tarnished the image a little bit. There's been, over the last 15 years in Shenzhen and Taiwan, there's been instances where they go to factories and found really unsanitary conditions. And, you know, not very clean factories and putting a lot of chemical ingredients and things that are not naturally occurring as a fermentation agent. So because of this, people are, even my parents, they're actually not really into stinky tofu because they don't know where the sources come from. So I think if stinky tofu makers in particular or factories can have a more of a sort of open house and more transparent way of showing the public that this is how we make this here. We use a naturally all vegetarian fermenting agents to kickstart the fermentation, and this is a factory that we produce these tofu in. I think if there's a more transparent sort of source, so the customers know that, okay, this is what we're getting this tofu from, and this place looks clean, looks legit, and maybe they'll be more openly accepted to trying stinky tofu.
And what are three words that come to mind when you think of stinky tofu?
Fried, funky, delicious are the three words I think of when people talk about stinky tofu.
Oh, that was a cool clip. All right, I'm like, yeah. Who wants to take up this marketing challenge?
One funny anecdote Jawa told me after I turned off the mic. He was saying in Canada when he was living there as a kid, somebody in the neighborhood was making stinky tofu in her garage, and basically they start getting all these complaints, and people called the cops because they thought there was a rotting corpse.
So oh my god!
And they're like, "You can't do this anymore." But yeah, I just wanted to share that.
Wow, hardcore. So in the studio with me today is Carson Yu. Carson is a food entrepreneur here in New York City and has been in the industry for about like 16 years now. He's totally self-made, and he's the founder of Outer Borough, which is a pop-up that reps Queens and serves Taiwanese-inspired street food. His mom runs a stinky tofu operation that supplies restaurants in Flushing, as well as Winsun in Brooklyn. And he thinks she makes the best stinky tofu, and he's going to tell us all about it. Welcome to the show, Carson.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so let's begin with just like you telling us about yourself and what you do and what Outer Borough is.
Oh, man, what a good question. I guess I am just a culinary entrepreneur, love to share my culture and the food that I grew up with through food and cooking and media. And I grew up in a small town in Queens, and that had a huge influence on my love for food and where how I connect to my culture. Mm-hmm. And as a kid, I remember one of the first memories was, as every immigrant family, parents were never home. They were too busy working and trying to feed the family. And my mom would, the earliest memories I had was my mom going to Costco and BJ's and buying cereal and Hot Pockets for us to eat. And I was just so sick of eating that kind of stuff. And for me, I think it was like me being rebellious. Like, oh man.
Yeah. You're like a smart kid for recognizing that stuff isn't good for you.
Right? I think that's because, I don't know, I think at that moment I wanted to be independent. It was like me being rebellious and more of like, you know what? I wanted to control what I was eating.
Cool.
Yeah, it started really young, and I just wanted to you know, I started cooking eggs and making sandwiches and kind of discovering that, like, there was other ways of feeding myself and other than just eating frozen food and things that are bad for you.
Yeah.
And I remember just sleeping at my friend's house, and I would wake up hungry, and I'm like, hey, like, do you want me to go cook breakfast for you guys? Because, you know, we were young, so they didn't really know how to cook or know what to do. I was like, yeah, go ahead, go to the kitchen. And what I would do is cook breakfast myself and everybody else. And again, it was just a control thing, an independence thing. And eventually that kind of helped me find my personality, which is like wanting to feed people, wanting to, you know, share my heart. And I found really joy in feeding people.
Cool. So from a young age, you feel like you found your career path, or?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
It came really, really early, and through like watching Food Network and the Travel Channel, that really helped. Having Friendsgiving and family get-togethers, I was always the one going to the kitchen and, you know, being active and taking responsibility of just helping out. And I think that also showed me other characters of myself, like being able to multitask, being able to be in control, being able to
lead. A business owner.
Eventually, that's what it led to. But it all started that way, you know, just being in the kitchen and kind of showing the abilities and talents that I had. It started like that.
Great. And tell us about your relationship with Stinky Tofu now. Did you grow up eating that?
My earliest memory, no, I didn't grow up eating it. I remember the earliest memories being in Flushing as a kid. And all my Flushing heads out there, if you remember one specific restaurant, it was Prince Street and Roosevelt Avenue, right at the corner. They served Sticky Tofu, a couple of Taiwanese snacks, and traditional Taiwanese shaved ice. And from that restaurant, it's such a great story, because that restaurant led me to, because my first business out of school was to open a Taiwanese ice cream shop, not shop, but like a pop-up at Hester Street Fair. And I remember that specific restaurant. I remember eating it as a kid and wanted to share that deliciousness and that experience that I had. Mm-hmm. And I also remember them serving Stinky Tofu.
All right.
Yeah.
So shaved ice and Stinky Tofu.
Yeah.
Okay.
What a combination, right? That should be my next business plan. Shaved ice and Sticky Tofu.
That, yeah. Special for sure. And so tell us about your mom's Stinky Tofu operation. Does it have a name? What makes it special? Why do you think it's the best?
It doesn't have a name because it's small batched. And the story comes from that specific restaurant. It closed down, I don't remember when, but there was someone who produced Sticky Tofu for them, small batch.
Mm-hmm.
And she eventually kind of like retired and kind of like didn't want to do it anymore because of that restaurant. It closed down. And my mom, you know, she asked my mom, she wants to take over the business, and she wanted to like have that live on.
So like, did your mom, was your mom also in the culinary world at that time, or she was a big fan of the Stinky Tofu?
She was. She owned a little small deli that produced a lot of like the things that you find in supermarkets, in Chinese supermarkets, actually, like kind of small, delicacies from Taiwan and Hong Kong, and kind of like packaged foods.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was already in the food industry, and for her, it was more like a business opportunity. She saw that, like, you know, she loves Sticky Tofu herself. She saw that, you know, she didn't want it to die with the restaurant.
Yeah.
She saw an opportunity that she wanted to kind of introduce it and deliver it to all over Flushing. So she got that fermentation bucket.
Is it like the mother sauce?
It is the mother sauce.
Okay.
So that mother sauce, it's still 20 years later, has not been changed. that's the great part of it.
That's the secret.
That's the secret. And that's the ancient secret. It just keeps building bacteria
Is it like the vegetable brine? Is it based from vegetables?
It's based from fermenting vegetables, sometimes shrimp or fermented milk. And it's the water has never changed. So if you ever see the water, it's green and slimy and ashy and gross.
It has a, like, beating heart in the middle of it.
Oh, yeah, it does.
I'm just, like, trying to imagine how she brought this over from Taiwan. Like, did she transport this?
That's true. I think
you... customs, like, what is this?
Maybe way back when, the customs were a little different.
Maybe.
But somehow, it got smuggled from Taiwan, and it got in the hands of my mom.
That's great.
And through the love of trying to spread sticky tofu and her, you know, wanting to... make it for her friends and for other restaurants became a small business.
So she makes everything small batch, you mentioned. So how does that work? And what does that mean?
So small batch means she picks up about 15 or 20 buckets of tofu from a tofu factory. And she individually places each tofu in a bucket of 50. And this process of touching every tofu is really important because, first of all, it doesn't crumble, and it's a love of labor. I mean, labor of love, because they're not factory doing it while, you know, like Iris said, probably these huge factories are taking huge vats of tofu, lifting it up through filters, and then dropping it into the fermentation process, and then lifting it up a few hours later. But she ferments it for about a day, and a day later she'll open it up and take out every tofu by hand, mm-hmm. making sure that, again, it's not crumbled, and you know, inspecting every one. And after that she brines it in water, mm-hmm. and delivers it.
That's amazing. She sounds like a perfectionist.
It is. I don't know. I think she's done it that way for that long, and that's all she knows, so she's gonna stick by it.
That's really cool. Okay, so what causes the smell?
It's the vegetables. It's all natural, mm-hmm. and I think it's just been there's so much bacteria in the mother sauce.
Yeah,
I don't know what really causes the smell. I mean, some people say it's like the dried shrimps. Some people say it's like the fermented milk.
The combination.
It's definitely a combination. But you put any water for 20 years, it's gonna smell like rotten feet.
Got it. That's true. So given its smelliness and all that, how do you appreciate it? And how do you know when it's good sticky tofu?
So I, as a kid growing up in this household and in this environment, I always hated it because it smelled and I never appreciated. But I think unless you grew up with it, like people in Taiwan, it's kind of normal. But people like our Westerners, we're not used to that smell. And how I appreciate it was... I remember a trip back to Taiwan, and you eat with your nose first. You enter these night markets, and they don't need advertisement. You just know that they're serving stinky tofu in. And what I realized is the stinkier, the better.
Just like, yeah, Iris, because, was saying.
Right, too. Right. And in order for you to understand that and appreciate it, like when Iris said her story, it's so great because when you have sticky tofu, if it doesn't have the smell, then you're just eating tofu. And you're like, oh, this is not that good. But it actually tastes better than the smell. And that fermentation process changes. It's a smell thing. It's a whole process. It's the fermentation process changing the texture of the tofu. And when you fry the tofu, it gets really crispy. So there's that. There's the crispiness. There's the smell. There's a crumbliness of the tofu itself from the fermentation process. And then it's the balance between the sweet soy and the hot sauce and the pickled cabbage with it. So the whole process, you start to appreciate why it's sticky tofu.
Mm-hmm. It's the labor of love and all of those factors you
exactly,
mentioned.
Exactly.
Delicious. So we're going to take a really quick break and we'll be right back.
I don't think there's anybody worthy to run this company but the people who built it. I have employees who've been with me for more than 30 years, and plus. Each and every one of them deserves to be an owner. That's just the way it ought to be, and that's just the way it is.
This is Bob Moore. He and his wife Charlie started Bob's Red Mill almost 4 decades ago. Today they offer one of the largest lines of organic whole grain foods in the country. And in 2010, on his 81st birthday, Bob gifted ownership of the company to his employees.
I'd received plenty of offers to buy my company over the years, but selling out never felt like the right thing to do. When the time comes to let someone else run this show, I can't imagine selling it to a stranger. Giving the company to my hardworking employees just feels right.
The company now has an employee stock ownership plan, or ESOP. Stock is put in a retirement plan for all of its employees. When employees retire, the company buys back their shares. According to the National Center for Employee Ownership, about 11,000 companies in the U.S. currently run as ESOPs.
It just shows how much faith and trust Bob has in us.
That's Bo Thomas, the company's engineer and maintenance superintendent. He's been with Bob's Red Mill for over 27 years and has put his four children through college in the process.
For all of us, it's more than just a job. And obviously, it's the same way for Bob, too.
Bob is still very active in the company. He's the president and CEO, and you'll find him working at the mill just about every day. Because when you love something this much, you want to be a part of it.
Well, I may have given them the company, but the boss part is still mine.
Bob's Red Mill is committed to sharing only the freshest, best-tasting whole grain foods on the planet. Learn more about their mission of good food for all at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
Welcome back. You're listening to Feast Meets West, and in the studio we have Carson Yu with us talking about stinky tofu. We were just talking about how to appreciate it. What is your favorite way to eat stinky tofu, Carson?
The only way I've actually tried is, I mean, there's two ways. I remember when I was in Taiwan back in 09, they grilled it, put some sweet soy, some chili sauce, served it with kimchi on a stick. That was delicious. And then the fried kind, which everyone does. And that's how I appreciate it, because I really enjoy how the fermentation process really changes the exterior of the tofu. And the balance between cutting the oiliness and the fat from the kimchi, well Taiwanese pickled cabbage. And it's always about the sauce, too. My mom has developed a sauce that we try to introduce to all the restaurants that serve it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but everyone has their own sauce. And the sauce that my mom tries to teach them is, I'm not going to tell you the secret, but it's a balance of salty from hoisin, and sugar, soy, and chili sauce. So that whole balance actually makes you want to go for more. And a lot of these restaurants, depending on region, I think mainland China likes a more saltier sauce. And it really doesn't do it for me. I think the salt...
You like the umami quality of that.
And that the sweetness kind of brings you back for more.
Yum, actually.
And I've never had the hot pot kind or the mala one, which Eric from the Tang is actually going to serve. Actually, that is a shameless tag right there, because he hasn't released it yet, but that's what he's going to do.
That's so cool.
We're gonna supply him with tofu, too.
Awesome. You're, like, making the rounds. How did your tofu end up on, like, Winston's menu, on Eric's menu? Are you the marketing dude?
Am I? I don't know. When you asked me, am I the expert of sticky tofu? I was like, no, I'm so not the expert. But I think I'm.
You're the guy providing it.
I am. I think I've been, because I've been trying to promote sticky tofu from like day one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've served sticky tofu at different. The only way we can serve sticky tofu was at a Taiwanese night market, which I help organize with TAP New York, which is a nonprofit. And we served tinky tofu at a Linsanity launch event. So those are kind of like, you knew your clientele, that they were more accepting of it.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the only times I can do it. And I've been an advocate of, like, you know, if it wasn't the process of cooking it and sticking up the neighborhood and people complaining like it's dead corpse, I would so open a sticky tofu house and serve it with shaved ice. And I think now with people like Eric, Josh and Trig, they've been able to bring Taiwanese food to a wider audience. And that was the connection. I think my goal was, you know, going back from that restaurant was you know, just trying to introduce my culture and my food. Mm-hmm. And if they have the keys to that, to a wider audience, then, you know, here's the keys to the kingdom, to the sticky tofu.
That's so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because one of my questions is also, do you think stinky tofu will ever be popular here in the States among the non-Taiwanese, non-Chinese natives? And will it ever reach, like, the blue cheese popularity level? But it kind of sounds like, you know, with, you know, the Taiwanese American restaurants doing well already here, you know, they have, like you said, the keys to kind of open it up to, you know, maybe funkier products and funkier dishes. What do you think?
Oh, man. Do I want? Yes. I mean, that's what I hope so much. Like, I think, like, sticky tofu is, like, the, I mean, that's, like, Taiwan's, like, prideful dish. Like, you walk into Taiwan, that's what you smell. And I think one day, I think the Westerners would appreciate it just like how we are more accepting of sticky cheese from England or durian from Southeast Asia. I have neighbors at Smorgasburg selling raclette, and it stinks, you know?
Oh, I've never had that.
Raclette, yeah, it's like a Swiss cheese. Okay. I'm sure you've seen it. Like,
oh,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, they grill it, and then...
I've seen it. I didn't realize it had a pungent smell.
Huge pungent smell.
Okay.
So, I always make fun of it. Like, one day, when the last day of Smorgasburg, I'm just going to bomb the place and serve sticky tofu, because if my neighbors can do it, then,
wow,
you know what, maybe they'll
be
more accepting of us. Yeah,
yeah.
And I guess one day I would want to see it being more mainstream. And mm-hmm. I don't think we don't need it to be mainstream, mm-hmm. because we believe that it's delicious.
Mm-hmm.
But people like Eric and Trig and myself, and I think we're building momentum, and I hope that, you know, we're getting there for sure.
That's cool. Do you feel like that's part of Taiwanese food gaining popularity here in the city?
Yeah, I mean, who's asking, right? I think Taiwanese food has been here.
Mm-hmm.
It's been in our neighborhoods. It's been, you know, going back to that corner on Prince and Roosevelt since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
It's been here. I don't think we need New York Times to tell us that it's here, or we don't need an insider post to say, hey, you know, we've made it. I think we've all had interest, and we all love it.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think people are, you know, just because I think Taiwanese culture and Taiwanese food is more prideful.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a slower ride, but I think it's here. I don't think we need someone to tell us that, you know, that's the next big thing. You know, I think we have so much joy and happiness already in our community trying to promote Taiwanese food that the next big thing is not going to change Taiwanese
just
food.
Just keep doing.
You just got to keep doing. Because anyone in this game for years now have just stayed consistent,
mm-hmm.
and has stayed from promoting Taiwanese food from a deeper passion, which is, you know, just their love, their heart, and promoting the culture and trying to bridge that gap of Western culture and our food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you've been doing that for quite a while now. And so what's next for you? What's on the agenda?
So, yeah, I've been trying to promote Taiwanese for a while. I've been trying to promote, you know, be the trying to bridge that gap. But now I think the next level for me is going back home. I think I'm going, well, the next thing for me, I'm opening up a restaurant in Flushing. And I never thought I would open a restaurant because it's so tough.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought that I would go back home to open up a restaurant, but it's also going to be a different kind of restaurant because we're going to open up a healthy fast casual.
In Flushing,
which is unheard of. And, you know, I've always talked about Flushing. I've always been, you know, the face of it. Well, not the face, but, you know, trying to be a cheerleader of it because Flushing has the best food.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in New York, but there's nothing really healthy. The healthiest thing you can probably find in Flushing is probably salad from McDonald's, or kind of like an
steamed rice noodles.
Yeah, right. That's healthy. So I think there was as the community changes, I saw an opportunity of, you know, I think they need someone like myself and need more people like myself to go back and be part of that change.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna try to make Chinese people eat brown rice. It's going to be kind of like an Asian dig-in, sweet green, mulberry, and vine.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to, you know, you choose a grain or you choose a salad, and you choose a lean protein, mm-hmm. and two vegetables. So it's going to be more of a vegetable-forward restaurant. And I think no one has ever done it, and it's unheard of because you're telling Chinese people are so used to buying a $5 rice box, and it's going to fill them up all day. Mm-hmm. We're charging $10, and, you know, China changed years and years and years of what people are used to. But I'm excited because, you know, maybe it wasn't meant for me to understand. Mm-hmm. I think because if my mom brought home something healthier as an option when I was a kid, maybe it would have changed my diet. Maybe it would have changed, you know, who I was, what I was going to do in my career or whatever. I don't know. It's kind of something that is purposeful and beyond me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Another marketing challenge, much like how the masses of stinky tofu fans enjoy it despite its smell.
Yeah.
You're going to have the people of Flushing lining up for brown rice.
I hope so. I mean, that's my mom says Chinese people need to be full. So I don't think it's going to happen, but I want to not believe that. I want to believe in the change, and I want to believe in, you know, a legacy.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. And then, so when people talk about you and say Carson, you, what would you be, you know, what would you like to be known for?
Man, that's a good question. Oh, man. I would always say
legacy.
Oh, my legacy. Well, I think we all live in fear, right? We're humans. And my biggest fear is that I didn't leave my gas tank on empty. And I, you know, whatever I touch, if it's something I say or if it's through my food or if it's, you know, a project that I'm doing, I would like to know that I gave it 100%, that there was no regrets. I was always myself. And, you know, that I was able to show people that I wasn't perfect, that mm-hmm. I appreciated this journey, and the journey was the reward. It wasn't the end goal, because I don't know what the end goal is. I don't mm-hmm. know. There is no end goal. There is no perfection. But the ride has been great. It's been and just appreciate that journey of who you are, of knowing who you are. And if I can liberate someone's fear, then that's what I want to remember by, that someone was able to be who they were, kind of be closer to what they are and what they meant to be, and close mm-hmm. that gap.
Cool. Well, thanks for sharing your perspective, Carson.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And that's it for our show today.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us on the show. For listeners who want to learn more about you or Outer Borough, how should they stay connected?
I am, the best way to follow me is on Instagram. That's my platform. I think that's how I can reach people, and that's where I feel like the fans really stay connected.
Is that at Carson U? And
oh, yeah, that's at Carson U and at Outer Borough.
Awesome. Well, thanks for tuning in, and we hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you haven't checked out our website yet, please head over to feastmeetswest.com for additional content, including show notes and Q&As with our guests. We'll be back next week with another awesome conversation from the world of Asian food. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place.
and we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.